This is Mechanics After Hours.
Welcome, one and all, a music and technology podcast. You are listening to episode 138. Before we jump in to the podcast proper, some stats, without an er in front of them, some stats from Pete the other day. We've broken, what was it, the 20,000 listen barrier.
Yes.
But it is accelerating, so thank you, new listeners, for tuning in and catching up, because we can watch you go from the beginning all the way through. It's quite interesting. Anyway, we must begin with the weekly update. Pete, what have you been doing while I've been away?
Well, I have been using my Bose S1 Pro little mini PA, which is made up of two S1 Pros, in anger for the first time.
Yes. How did they perform?
Very well. I was very pleased with how they worked when you had them working simultaneously.
Yeah. How was the process of stereoing them?
That was remarkably easy.
Ah, awesome.
All I had to do was download a Bose application onto my phone,
yep,
and it was all there within the app, where you can say that you have a primary one that you're connecting to with Bluetooth, and then you designate another one, and somehow in the ether it decides that one's going to be left and one's going to be right.
It just figures it out.
Yep. So I was sending audio to the pair of speakers, were organizing how they dealt with the music. So other than the power cords going into the units to power them up, there was no other cabling at all.
Awesome. And of course those don't need to be there if you've only got a couple of hours of whatever it is you're doing.
Well, 8 hours.
Oh, wow. It was a whole day.
Well, no, what I meant to say was the batteries...
Oh, they go for 8 hours.
Go for 8 hours, allegedly. I didn't...
Good stuff.
...try that. They were plugged in. But yes, I was very pleased. Easy to do. And music-wise was good, because I was streaming from Amazon Music to the phone via the cell net and then transmitting that via Bluetooth to the speakers.
This world we live in.
And it didn't even sneeze at any stage. It just... ran, and it was a long day. It was a 12-hour day.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, I am very pleased with those speakers.
I've vindicated that purchase.
And I'm using them again tomorrow for another event.
Yes, indeed. And they'll be flight-cased there and back, perfectly safe. Do love a flight case.
Yes, much better than the exceedingly expensive rucksack that Bose provide
for them. It was like 120 last time I remember laughing at it.
It's more like, I think, off the top of my head, something like 148, 150 pounds for a rucksack.
Ouch.
Yes, rather expensive. I mean, it's a very nice rucksack.
It better be.
I know, but it's a lot of money. And my flight cases were somewhere in the region of £90 each. And obviously provide a lot more protection than a rucksack.
Certainly. And you can sit on them.
Yes, and stack them and do things and utilize them.
Perfect. Any more adventures from your week?
I have been doing a lot of nostalgic video selection, video editing.
Indeed.
On the sort of nostalgia trail that I discussed last week or the week before, when I was talking about recovering audio and getting master tapes
and such.
And master tapes. And now I'm doing the same with video.
What formats have you encountered on this journey? Or is it all pre-digitized and it's just wading through the archives?
No, some of it is still languishing on tape.
Oh, yeah.
And the medium that I was using back then, we're talking over 30 years ago, was Video 8 cassettes.
Gotcha. I have never encountered anything tapey when it's video. Was it digital video on a tape? Because it's not going to be like Super 8, like film.
And Video 8 is an analog.
Oh, interesting. Cool.
Format.
Is it a magnetic tape?
Yes.
I'm going to have to go on YouTube it and get an explanation of how it works, because I must know now. And also how audio tape works, because I'm just thoroughly confusing myself, if I'm honest.
And there's no way other than actually using cable and then streaming it from a player to a small box that converts it into a digital format and then sends it on by USB into your computer. The point where it becomes video is when I do the translation of the video, when I'm recovering it or translating it onto the PC. It's a magnetic tape.
Yes, it must be digital.
And it's a flying head. Well, the flying heads are the ones where the head's rotating, spinning at high speed.
Right, yes.
And that's VCR old school technology. Mm-hmm. Very mechanical, very prone to going wrong.
Wonderful.
It's certainly with the cameras, you would transmit the signals. If you wanted to transmit the signal directly, let's say, into another recorder, you'd send it via an analog cable.
Like the RGB cables, isn't it? Or is it just the yellow one?
Well, it was...
I'm so confused. I haven't done any of this kind of video.
You would have a yellow one.
Yeah.
For the video signal.
And then it was red and white for the audio.
Yeah, or red and black would be the audio.
We need to pick the brains of somebody who's really into video synthesis or something.
Yes. I mean, around about the same time, I was working with DAT tapes for audio, and they were definitely digital, as indicated by the name, digital audio tape.
Yeah, it makes sense. What do they look like?
They look very similar to the small Video 8 cassettes, but just that bit smaller.
And what do the Video 8 cassettes look like? Because I've never seen one. Well, let's Google it, because that's what the internet is for.
They're slightly larger than an audio cassette and a bit junkier.
Yeah, no, they just look like really small video tape cassette, whatever we used to call them. They were just videos back then. There wasn't really a suffix.
No. Yeah. Well, there was the two formats, wasn't there? There was the VHS format, which was the one that was
VHS, yes, that was the acronym.
Widely adopted.
That's all I used.
But there was the Betamax system, which didn't catch on domestically, but was actually
was that a Sony thing?
I don't know who was the initial developer, but it was very similar to what professional videographers and broadcast companies were actually using.
It was Sony.
Well, a lot of video technology came out of Sony and still does.
You get a lot of this kind of stuff on YouTube with guys like Techmoan.
Yes.
On YouTube. And there's somebody who I think has like 8-bit in their channel name, but going through all the old formats. One of them has a really good video. Yes, so this is the 8-bit guy, with a hyphen if you're looking for the channel. 108 rare and bizarre media types is a 37-minute long video that I thoroughly enjoyed. There's a thumbnail of him holding some huge tape cassette contraption, but it's brilliant. And he'll go right, I think it's chronological, he goes right through, I think, does he start at wax cylinders maybe? And end in, what were those little kind of disc things that he had with the Sony PSP? Kind of very small discs in little cases.
Yeah, I believe they were just optical discs, but
yeah,
little teeny tiny ones.
With a little carrier. Anyway, that... a little small nugget of miscellaneous media. Yeah, go and watch 108 rare and bizarre media types by the 8-bit guy on YouTube. It's good fun. Right. My week. I mentioned that I have just come back from a bit of a holiday. I was previously in Denmark, more specifically Copenhagen, for a little bit of a getaway. The first time I've been to Europe in many years. And I was a bit scared about it and language barriers, and I was working myself up into a bit of an anxiety-type situation, and I was fine.
No need.
Absolutely no problem at all, because everybody has perfect English. Better English than us, in fact. It was incredible. And watching them swap mid-sentence was fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, great time. Good beer, good food, more good beer, and there was some good food as well. And most importantly, a lot of really, really good coffee. That was one of the primary objectives of our trip, was to sample the coffee culture there as much as we possibly could. Lots of small cafe roaster combinations, I think. Not a chain, like a big chain, but certainly they had multiple cafes. The Coffee Collective topped the charts for us with, actually, one of theirs was just a batch brew, like the cheap filter coffee that you know, cheap and maximum caffeine type situation. But absolutely delicious. Fruity, clean was kind of the word. We wondered if they had some excellent minerality in their water or something, but clean, delicious. I'll stop waffling about coffee, but it was great. On the way back, not on the way back, but after I came back, I was treated to the new edition of the Bikepacking Journal, the biannual publication, so I've still got that to chew on. I think that was a show and tell once, because it's a very satisfying, nicely printed, nicely written, and many nice photographs to be found in there. One thing that I discovered while I was doing some reading, while I was out there, I finished reading Garden of the Gods, which is the third book from the Corfu trilogy, My Family and Other Animals, Gerald Durrell, nature fame, that guy, Gerald Durrell. But the other book that I've been chewing on is called Peace is Every Step, which is by Thich Nhat Hanh, who's a Vietnamese Buddhist monk of great renown. And there was one, it's divided up into little nuggets, you know, you should read a little paragraph, apply that to your day, mindfulness, all that kind of stuff. But there was one bit about children eating satsumas and how a young child, when handed a satsuma to peel, they cannot focus on anything other than peeling and eating a satsuma. And it was just directing you to focus your attention on one physical thing and enjoying the smell of, you know, when you peel into one, you get that little burst of
zestiness.
Yeah. And other bits around this portion of the book reminded me of the way that we feel about those certain objects that we've discussed on this podcast many a time. The first one that comes back to my head is that exquisite hammer that you purchased from, is it D&M Tools?
Yep.
Oh, look at that memory.
D&M Tools of Twickenham.
Ooh, lovely stuff. But when we hold these objects and think about them and talk about them and appreciate them, our focus is singular, which doesn't often happen in our modern day-to-day lives. But I thought it was quite interesting that two weirdos on a music and technology podcast talking about hammers had some sort of parallel with Buddhism, potentially, if you really want to stretch it. But I thought that was kind of funny. Anyway, shall we talk about some synthemicizers?
Yes, let's do.
Whoa! Do you want to crack on with some very exciting news? Because I don't care about what I've got. I'm just excited about this thing because I haven't heard about this thing. Where did you find this thing?
On the ExpressiVE website.
No way. What's it doing there?
I was just curious about where we stood with the Osmos.
And
As you may recall, a few weeks ago when we were talking about supply chain issues and so forth, I kind of wrote off or stated that I didn't think we were ever going to see one.
Mm-hmm.
But I just thought, I'll have a little look, see what's going on, see if things have changed. And then when you look, things are pretty much the same in the respect that it says coming soon in 2022,
yeah.
But not able to pre-order or anything like that. But I dug a little bit deeper and I got a bit of information about where they currently are. And it's a lot more optimistic than I had anticipated. So basically, they got a little synopsis of bullet points by date as it's proceeded along the development corridor, if you want to call it that.
Awesome.
And they are a lot more advanced than I anticipated. I'll most probably start at the end of March 2022.
Mm-hmm.
And they're saying complete lockdown of our workers and factory in Shanghai.
Yep, sounds about right.
And then they go on to say June, July 2022, assessment of the situation after the Shanghai lockdown, relaunch of mass production.
Very good news.
Quality control of the first pallet received via air freight.
Ah, so physical ones must be in existence somewhere in the world.
Yes. And then starting August 2022, ramp up of mass production.
Ooh.
Finish shipment by sea from Shanghai factory to France. An announcement of individual ETAs for every backer.
Oh, was it a Kickstarter?
I believe so.
It's been so long, we forgot how it began. Yeah, because, yeah, at one point ExpressiVE weren't doing so well.
No.
And I think they had some kind of deal with Focusrite that helped them out a bit.
It wouldn't surprise me.
Either way, real Osmosi exist in the world.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
They're coming to Europe and they're being distributed to the backers in sequential order.
That is so... Oh, we're going to start seeing them on YouTube soon.
Hopefully.
Ooh, brilliant. Good find.
I seem to remember through the mists of time when we started thinking and talking about it, that there was some sort of... I can't remember if it's an Indiegogo or
one
Kickstarter
of those,
or one of those, but I didn't take the opportunity at the time. But
hindsight.
It would have been a long and stressful wait.
Oh, definitely.
But being optimistic, once they've cleared these back orders for the early adopters, possibly we'll see some retail.
I really want to get my hands on one. Not that I have the requisite ability to make one sing, but I just want to squish it.
I might check when I'm back in the shop who the actual distributor is for ExpressiVE and have a chat with them and see if they've got any heads
up. I believe it is Source Distribution.
Okay. Mm. Well, I'm pretty chummy with those guys.
Definitely.
So I'd most probably give them a buzz.
Absolutely. As soon as you hear that they've got stock,
give Chris a little email saying, what do you know about these?
Ooh, wonderful.
Yes, I'm encouraged. Amongst all this supply chain doom and gloom.
I was going to say doom and gloom's the phrase, yep.
It's a little bit of light at the end of the tunnel.
Excellent. Well, I hope that's brightened your day, morning, evening, bath time, listeners, wherever you are. Excellent stuff. And if somehow you've got through all this and thought, Osmose, Expressive E, what? Think the Seaboard range by Rolly, but they did it right. Hashtag shots fired or something. But yeah, go look it up. There's a really, really good cuckoo video on YouTube that you must watch because he makes the thang sing. My news, I have Instro news. We love Jason at Instro. He makes some incredible stuff. And wherever you look on the articles on this thing, everyone's going, oh yes, of course, it's the year of the stereo oscillator in the modular world. And it has been after the great stereo filter off of earlier this year, I think. Anyway, he's got a stereo oscillator and it's called something Gaelic. I think it's Cruin, which is C-R-U- I with an umlaut on top, if it's called an umlaut, if it's of Scottish descent, I don't know. And then a double N, C-R-U-I double N will probably get you there. He has a video on his channel, 1 hour 37 minutes and 14 seconds long, because he's a technical man with a big brain and he shows off a lot of stuff. I'm just going to play a very, very tiny segment of epicness. Have you got the fader up there, Pete?
I have indeed.
After it's been AC coupled, because this is natively unipolar positive.
So yeah, supersaws on supersaws on supersaws. This is quite an interesting one. So there is a sawtooth core oscillator in there. Yes, a single sawtooth oscillator core with five extra phase displaced sawtooths for a total of six. And you can do various modulation-y things to do the supersaw to end all supersaw. After you stack a certain number on top of each other, it starts to lose the impact. You know, if you use a plugin that it's digital, you can stack as many waves on top of waves as you like. After a while, it just starts getting a bit, I don't know. How would you describe that thing when you've put too many saws in your super?
Extra thick.
Extra thick. But I think it starts sounding worse at a certain point. And this one sounds juicy. There are two level controls on the top because there are clipping options in there which kind of make it break up in a really cool way. That's demonstrated in the video. Go and find that. There's an LFO per wave for various things. I believe you can modulate the phase so you get some really nice swirly stuff. And stereo outputs on there. And of course, like Lubad, and that's the only one I can remember the name of, but the granular one, it comes with an expander, which gives you extra stuff. In this case, individual outputs and some individual modulation inputs for some stuff. Just go check out the video, because Jason is brilliant. And that's a super cool oscillator. Super cool stuff. The other one, because he's always released two modules. This one's called Knock. I think it's just pronounced Knock. C-N-O with a squiggly boy on top. C, Knock. This guy is it 4HP? Yeah, it looks 4HP to me. This is a very small function generator, two-stage, AR and ASR style stuff, with a looping switch and response curve stuff. So LFOs, envelopes, the usual kind of thing. But equally, the video for that is 1 hour 21 minutes 21 seconds long. So there's going to be more than those few things I just said. But go and find them on the Instro channel if you are interested, and you should be, because it's some of the tip-toppiest modules that aren't made by Tip Top Audio themselves. Hooray! Here's a fun one. I'm going to come back to this one last because I think it's super cool. So, remember Rhodes?
Yes.
I never really figured out if they're actually related to the original Rhodes company that Fender bought at one point.
We're talking about the new re-release Rhodes.
Yes, we are. That one. So, let me refresh your brain on some pricing. I don't know how available they are, but you can certainly order them. We're working in US dollars for this exercise, students. And to refresh your memory first, the most basic of standard basic boys is 9,450 big US smackaroons, that is £6,795. If you spec it up, as spec'd up as you can spec, that includes a transparent hood to reveal the hammers and tines and such, a walnut bottom shell, the effects panel, because that's optional, and a stand of either colour. The maximum you can splash out on one of these, unless you try and do something super custom, is $12,640, but there's a special edition. 75-year anniversary, a limited edition of 75, for the 75, the 75. 75's all round. Do you want to cast your bet, Pete, on how pricey this one's going to be? Let me read you some of the features first. Like the specced out one, it has the transparent cover. This one is also all black and gold, so it's got a special custom stand, and I believe the pedal is color matched as well, and it comes with the effects. Place your bets. The top specky of the top specky was $12,640, remember.
I'm going to go relatively high, like I tend to do. $20,000.
No, it's not, unfortunately. But it is $13,495.
Yeah, I keep overdoing it a bit on these challenges.
But yeah, if you wanted an even more expensive instrument, and you should want one of these, they look incredible. I mean, special edition's cool and all, but just the normal one is fine. That's, I believe, a computer-generated rendering for you there, Pete.
Possibly. It's hard to tell these days.
Yeah, it looks computer-generated to me. And they are saying delivery estimate of 6 per month beginning January 2023, if you're full of cash.
Yeah.
I expect a lot of these will go to studios. The last one, which is super cool, is a new tiny synthesizer company, which I'm just going to have to go to their about page because I know nothing about them. Right, here we go. The company is called Galax, or Galax, or I'm going to call it Galax, like galaxy without the Y. Galax is an electronic instrument manufacturer based in Durham, North Carolina. Our mission is to design novel and intuitive electronic instruments which emphasize playful human expression over dense features and menus. We're currently working on our first synth, Balsam. If you'd like to keep up with the project, please join our mailing list. I have done so because I do want to keep up with this thing. Here, Pete, can I make this bigger? Let me just zoom in. Here are the pickies. So it's got Music Easel vibe on here. I'm going to describe it to our audience because that's the fun nature of this audio-only experience. We have a rectangular wooden enclosure, bigger than probably bigger than both of your spread hands next to each other, delicately softened corners, and a slight incline towards the user. You have ARP Odyssey kind of style faders in a row in the top half with a few knobs that look quite Buchler-y. On the lower half, you have some long throw faders, sort of mixery, each with a big square button beneath it, mixing desk styly. And in the bottom left corner, you've got another knob, two faders, which look like they could be output section related stuff. But there's a suspicious row of LEDs beneath them, which could either be a VU meter or a sequencer. I have no idea. But what can we learn about such a thing? Here it is, just a closer upper.
Somehow it looks expensive.
It does look expensive, and I can't remember if I found any pricing, but let me have a look, because this has more stuff. The bottom left two doobries are labelled controller. There is a filter section, an amplifier section. Those are both the envelopes, the four-stage envelopes for them. There's mod, which looks like it's probably a looping or not looping AR style thing. There's a noise fader, two oscillators with octave switches and waveform mixing, maybe. There's cutoff and volume and some diagrams that make it look suspiciously stereo. Yeah, those big faders with the buttons underneath. No idea what those do.
Certainly a very non-conventional layout.
And it has a really cool look. Oh yeah, if you want to have a look, it's galaxcorp.com. That is GALAXCORP.COM. And if we go back, yes, the instrument is called Balsam. There is a YouTube video on there. Interestingly, that glissando-y note happened when the user raised one of the big faders at the bottom. This also has a Deckard's Dream in it, so I'm not going to play much more of that. This is Balsam on its own. The subtitle here is Balsam Using the Polyrhythm Generator. delicious. I detect stereo.
Yes.
Okay, that's all I think I can play, really. Here is the bump for you. Balsam is a digital modal synthesizer designed by Galax Synthesizer Corp, named after the thick, resinous sap that flows from fir trees. The instrument's sound dwells in the tension created by slow, sliding note bends and the release of gradually resolving chords. Balsam is inspired by the playful experimentation of the 1960s West Coast synthesis and the earthy cabinetry of Bob Moog's designs. It features a curved walnut enclosure and an experimental slider interface designed to break the conventions of chromatic keyboards while still remaining harmonically musical. Each slider allows a voice to be pitch-bent and modulated independently, creating an array of possibilities for building and resolving harmonic and timbral tension. Balsam is also equipped with MPE functionality so that it can be used in tandem with newer analog polysynths such as Black Corporation's Deckard's Dream. Galax is planning a limited release of Balsam in late 2022, early 2023. If you'd like to keep up the project, please join the Galax mailing list, which, as again, I have done. Interesting.
Yeah. The more I hear about it, the more expensive it's sounding.
Yes, but it is digital, so...
But there's a lot of wood there.
There is a lot of
wood. You know what happens when there's a lot of wood in a synthesizer? The price just goes skyrocketing.
Indeed it do. What else have we got here? Links. No idea. But I am going to subscribe to them on YouTube, because I want to know more when there's more to know. Got some close-ups here on Instagram. Aluminium panel, it looks like. And yeah, digital on the inside.
A sexy wooden and aluminium box with a control surface and an Arduino stuck to the underside.
Most likely. Although apparently it's really difficult to get hold of Teensies these days. And that does not surprise me in the slightest. Anyway, there we are. Synthesizer news. Newsed. You know what that means, Pete. It's time for the miscellaneous multimedia recommendation, more often known, or not, because we only started doing that recently. But what has Pete found on YouTube this week? Fire away while I try and think of something to suggest, because I haven't consumed miscellaneous media.
This is going to be a very brief one, and possibly a YouTube channel that we've already recommended. I certainly believe we might have discussed it. Anyway, it is Theo Janssen's channel, and he is the artist that creates the Strong Beasts.
Oh, yeah. Awesome.
And the reason I'm mentioning it, that he's got some new beasts that he's posted on his channel this year. And he doesn't tend to post a lot, but there seems to be a new clutch of beach-crawling, walking beasties. And so, simply, that is my multimedia recommendation for this week, the YouTube channel Theo Janssen, spelled Theo Janssen.
Wonderful stuff. I do have one thing to recommend, and it is from the YouTube channel Shut Up and Sit Down, which is a board gamey type review sort of channel. I haven't watched a huge amount of their videos, but there is a really cool one, which there's a video that really hit the spot while I'm thinking about board gamey tabletop RPG things. If you, dear listener, like me, dear narrator, anyway, have been interested in RPGs, tabletop RPGs like Dungeons and Dragons, there's a Tales from the Loop RPG, all this kind of stuff, because you're a massive nerd, and yeah, it'd be good fun. But there's a little bit of fear in there of the unknown and acting in front of people you either don't know or are your friends, and yeah, improvised stuff, improvisation, talking, making things up as you go along. It's kind of scary stuff. But if you go to Shut Up and Sit Down's YouTube channel, How to Get into Tabletop RPGs is a brilliant video. And if you've been introduced to such a world through some of the manifold series that can be found on YouTube and other streaming services, I believe, those really polished, slick, well-produced, multicam, sort of overhead cameras on the board, professional actor and improviser type things, this might allay some of your fears. There is a brilliant quote that I will grab from the video, because somebody very thoughtfully left it in the comments, so I don't have to go and dig for it in the video. Actually, before I read you the quote, those really slick, polished series of people playing RPGs that you can watch and are very entertaining are called Actual Play, I think, by people in the community. I'm not in the community, so I don't really know. I'm not one of the cool kids. Anyway, Actual Play is the stuff. What's his face? The chap in this video is called Quinn. So Quinn says, Actual Play is to role-playing as pornography is to sex. Watch the video. It's really, really good. If you're interested in tabletop RPGs, go find Shut Up and Sit Down's YouTube channel.
I'm not quite sure about his analogy there.
I'm going to have to try and remember it from the video so I can explain it a little bit better.
Well, I understand it. It's just the usage of that particular analogy is a bit dodgy.
In that case, let me go and get the other quote that I really like from that video. It's probably better in context. Oh, yeah. So this was from the video. There was a tip for the dungeon master / game master, whatever you want to call it, the person who's in charge of the adventure. And if that's the role you really want to play in your group, but you're worried about the huge amount of acting that you'll have to do and the depth that you might have to make for your characters, his advice was to make your characters have the depth of a wrestler. What's that? You know, the like WWE type wrestling, the fake stuff that's kind of just...
Pantomime.
Yeah, pantomime. So their character is, you know, the shallowest thing in the world. It is their costume and maybe one or two catchphrases. And that's all you need to think about for your characters. And he did some funny little skits with that. So if you're scared of role-playing games, go watch the video because you probably won't be anymore. And you'll suddenly wish you had more friends so you could actually play some RPGs with them. I know I wish I had more friends that were interested in RPGs. Anyway, there you go. That's media. It's miscellaneous and I've recommended it. The podcast's done. Thank you, as always, for tuning in. Did you know that social media is a magical thing that exists? Did you know Rack Addicts are there? Yeah! Come find us on Instagram. Facebook. Is that it?
Twitter?
Oh, we're on Twitter as well. I've never used Twitter. How does it work? I don't know how it works at all. But more importantly, tune in next week for episode 139. Stay safe. Farewell.